Ready when you are.
Okay. Yesterday, when I was looking at your page, it looked like Muhammad said, hey, and I realized it was a dot.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So we are holding up a Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis. We've learned about the three minim so far, so now we're up to the Lulav. I mean, sorry, now we're up to the Etrog. Mishnah says, first we start off with some of the regular ones that we've had with all the other minim. Etrog agazo va yavesh pasul, or stolen Etrog or dry Etrog is pasul, for the same reason as the other minim. Shal asher v'shal erani dachas pasul, if it comes from an asher tree or from an erani dachas, then it's pasul, because as we said, it has to be burnt. Although we'll talk about that a little bit in the Gemara. Now we have some new ones, though. The Etrog, unlike all the other ones, is a fruit. It's edible. So therefore, there are various dinim that apply to it that didn't apply to the other minim. It has to be edible lalacha. So the next one, shall orla pasul, an Etrog of orla is pasul, because you can't eat it. And as the Gemara, it's more than just you can't eat it. As the Gemara points out, you're not even allowed to have benefit from it. Which, in and of itself, you might think is not really such an issue, because big deal, mitzvahs lav la'anis nitnu. We talked about the other day that mitzvahs are not, the benefit you get from doing a mitzvah is not really considered a benefit in halacha. So therefore it should not, on the face of it, it shouldn't be an issue because of that. We'll talk about it in the Gemara.
Because of what? Because of having hana'a when...
You're not allowed to have hana'a from orla. But the rule is that mitzvahs lav la'anis nitnu. You feel a certain benefit from getting a mitzvah. You know, you feel the satisfaction of having done it right. You feel, in the case of a mitzvah like shofar, for example, you enjoy the sound of it, etc. All of that doesn't count in halacha. All of that is not considered a hana. Because Rashi says in a few places, a mitzvah is supposed to be basically gzeiras melech. You're doing it because the Eibishter said so.
But you're allowed to have hana.
You're allowed to have hana, but the hana that you have is not considered important. It doesn't count. It's not considered a forbidden hana. So why is it that it's Etrog of Orla is possible? We'll talk about it in the Gemara. Shall truma tamei apostle. Similarly, an Etrog of truma, which became tamei, is possible. Again, truma, which is tamei, you can't eat. But again, we'll talk about it in the Gemara. Can you use it for something else?
And give him the top shine of the Gemara, please.
I found I had one of my own, so this way, yeah. Shall truma tahora, what about an Etrog of truma which is tahor, which a kohen is allowed to eat, but Yisrael is not? Lo yito, you should not take it, achilah. The imnot are kosher, but if you did take such an Etrog, then it would be kosher. We'll talk about in the Gemara the details. Shall dmai, what about if the Etrog is dmai? Dmai is fruit which you're not sure if truma and meiser, not truma, you're not sure if meiser has been taken from it. Basically, the idea is they found in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, Yochanan and Kohen Gadol sent messengers around and discovered that the Amei Aretz are all very careful about Truma, but they're not not a majority of them, it is a minority, but a significant minority are not careful about Maaser. So therefore, that created the concept in Halacha called Dmai, which is therefore you're not sure if Maaser and Truma's Maaser has been taken, you have to take it all to be on the safe side, but in this case you have an Etrog which is Dmai. So if it was definitely Tevel, then we'll talk about it in the Gemara. But here we're Dmai. Beis Shammai Preisin and Vesilah Machshun. So Beis Shammai says it's possible, and Vesilah says it's kosher. Shall Maiser Sheni be Yerushalayim? If it's an Etrog of Maiser Sheni... If it's an Etrog of Maiser Sheni in Yerushalayim, which you allowed outside Yerushalayim, you wouldn't be able to use it, because you're not allowed to eat it there. But if it's in Yerushalayim, so again, lo yito, just like with the truma, you should not take it. Lachchila v'im not al kosher, but if you did take it, then v'diavet it's good. More dinim. Now that we've dealt with the various dinim that have to do with whether the Etrog is allowed to be eaten or used or whatever, now we go on to other things that are specific to an Etrog. Various kinds of blemishes that are specific to an Etrog. Also chazazis al rubai. If a chazazis is on most of the surface of the Etrog, a chazazis Rashi says that it's basically, it's little, no, not rough. A normal esrog skin is rough. A normal esrog skin is bumpy. That's one of the simonim of an esrog versus a lemon, you know, versus an esrog that's grafted with a lemon. But a chazal is like a kind of like, Rashi describes kamin avaboyes dakos. It's like small bubbles. Sort of like boils, basically. And in fact, Mepharshim say that actually, Mepharshim point out that the Targum Onkelos, I think it is, or Targum Yonason, whatever it is, translates a word for boils in Lashon Kodesh that we find in Chumash Vayikra, he translates as Chazazan. So that's basically what it is. It's kind of boils that affect the Esrog. So if it covers most of the Esrog, we're saying then the Esrog is possible. Nitla pitma. So another case is if the pitma was removed. Now, what is the pitma? So Rashi says over here it means what we call it, what we think of as the pitim. But actually, Rashi talks about later that another one of his teachers had a different explanation, although Rashi himself doesn't like it, which is that the pitma is actually part of the oikets, part of the stem of the esrog. If we look, we all know what a typical esrog looks like. So you normally have, at one end of it is the pitum, which basically is left over, that's at the top end of it. That's basically the leftover of the flour that the esrog produced, that was produced from. You know, in many flowers you have a stick, I forget what it's called in English, growing in the middle. It's not a stick, it's got a name in English, a pistil, I think, or something, whatever it is. The pitum is basically what's left of that. And then at the other end you have the oikos, you have the stem, which is what the esrog hung from on the tree. So Rashi's explanation here on the mission is that pitmase means what we call the pitum, which is at the top of the esrog. Rashi has brings an explanation later on from one of his rebbeim, although he himself doesn't like it, although Tosfos defends it, that pitmasai actually means the stem itself, the oikos, as opposed to the next thing, which we'll talk about later in the Mishnah Uktzai. Rashi says is the thing surrounding the stem.
Okay.
No, obviously some part of it is cut off, but we'll talk about when we get to the Gemara. We should get to it at the end of today's Gemara. We'll see how Rashi explains it and what Rashi does and doesn't like about that. Anyway, the nikla pitma, say if the pitum was removed, niklas, if the esrog was peeled. Now peeled, by the way, we have to clarify. We're going to have to keep straight here in the Mishnah and for a few things in the Gemara, that actually the peel of it, we usually think of the peel of the esrog as a thick white rind over there. That, you know, you have the outside layer, you have the very outside layer of the esrog, which has the yellow color. Then you have that thick white rind, and then in the middle you have the fruit of the esrog. You know, if we think of it like you think of a lemon or an orange or whatever, you know, the fruit is the majority of it. That is the fruit of the esrog. In Gemara terminology, it's not like that. In Gemara terminology, that thick white rind is actually called the flesh of the esrog. That is, in Gemara terminology, the esrog proper. What's inside that is called chadre hazera. It's called the area where the seeds are. So unlike, for example, in an orange, you have the fruit of the orange is most of it, and then you have a moderately thick white rind, and then on the outside of it you have the orange color. With an esrog, you have the yellow, you have a thick white, and then you have a little area in the middle that has the seeds. The white is what the Gemara thinks of as the body of the esrog, as the flesh of the esrog. This over here. This white over here is the Bsara esrog. The little part in the middle, I mean, here they're showing it much bigger than it is in any real esrog, but the part that has the seeds is called Chadre Hazera. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. And then the thin outer layer on the outside that has the yellow color, that's what the Mishnah and the Gemara are calling the Klippa. So Niklaf over here doesn't mean you peeled off the whole white rind and you've exposed the flesh of it. It means that you peeled off just a little bit of the outside yellow layer, and nowadays in cooking they call it the zest. Yeah.
Lemon zest,
orange zest, etc. Yeah. So here, if you made esrog zest out of it, so we're saying it's possible.
How could you peel it off?
So we'll see in the Gemara. Actually, we'll see there is a way in which the esrog can be peeled, but technically it's still kosher. We'll get to it. Nistak, another case, is if the esrog is split. So we're not talking about nothing, none of the actual body of the estrog is missing, but you know how it happens, you know, fruit gets wet or whatever, and then it dries, and then it splits. Nikav, v'chosu kol shehu, or if it has a hole and any of the actual flesh of the estrog, again, any of the white stuff, is missing, all those are possible. On the other hand, also chazazis on the otar, if there's a chazazis that grew only on a small part of the estrog, and we'll talk about, when we get to the Gemara, we'll talk about how this relates to the blood lock that you have nowadays on a surrogate, etc. Nitzel uktzai, or blood lock of the little black or brown dot that you sometimes see on a surrogate. We'll get to it in the Gemara. So also chazazis on the otay, if a chazazis grew only on a minority of the esrog, nitzel uktzai, or if the oiketz was removed. So again, according to Rashi, oiketzai means the stem that is hung from on the tree, which is at the bottom of the esrog. And at the end of today's Gemara, we'll get to Bezes Hashem that Rashi talks about, that one of his teachers explained it meant the thing around the stem. You have the stem itself that goes into the estrog, and then you have like the little bud kind of around it. Nikav loichas kolshu, or if the estrog has a hole but none of the actual substance of the estrog is missing. Which, you know, you could imagine two possibilities. Either, for example, the estrog is dented, basically, you know. Or that's, for example, that you stuck like a fine needle into it or something, you know, and then pulled it out, and none of the actual estrog flesh has been removed. In Shulchan Aruch, it actually... No, in other words, so if you stuck a needle, let's say, through the white, and then, you know, pulled it out the other end, nothing's actually been removed, right? The needle just kind of pushed it to the side. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. That's still kosher, yeah. Although we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow that it depends whether the hole goes all the way through or not. But it does actually mention in Shulchan Aruch, since we said at the beginning of the Mishnah that a dry estrog is possible. How do you know if it's dry? It means if it has no moisture left. How do you know if it has any moisture left? The normal ways that you would figure out involve opening an estrog, and that'll make it possible anyway. So in Shulchan Aruch it says, as a practical matter, if you have an estrog where you're not sure if it's completely dry, put a needle through it, like in one area or whatever, and then see if it, put a needle with a thread through it and see if, you know, after you pull out the thread, if there's any moisture on the thread, then you know that the estrog still has some moisture and it's not completely dry. Then it would be possible. If you have two that are the same, you can do that, but if you only have one. So since it's not missing anything, then it's fine. Another case, the Mishnah says, estrog akushi, puzzle. A kushi, literally a black estrog, is puzzle. We'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow about how black it has to be, or the different, does it matter where it grew, etc.
Does this have to be black, or does it have to also be African-American?
Come on. Well, no, but forget American, but we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow whether it actually means that it grew in the land of Kush in Ethiopia. Or does it mean, you know, it grew someplace else, but it has this unusual color? Bahayorik kauti, what about an estrog? We talked about this before, that's green like a leek. Rameo says it's kosher, Rabbi Yehuda says it's possible. We talked about it a couple of days ago because if it's green, it may not be completely finished yet, and Rabbi Yehuda feels that it can't be considered a pre then, it can't be considered a fruit. Shiur estrog katan, the size of the minimum size of an estrog. Rameo emeka egas. Rameo says the minimum size is like the size of a nut, a walnut. Rabbi Yehuda emeka beta. Rabbi Yehuda says the size of an egg.
Is that usually like one of them says beta and the other one?
Well, the other one is kegas, is like a nut.
Is it usually consistent who says what for a certain thing?
Not necessarily, no. Uva gadol, what's the largest size estrog you can use? Kedeshiyeches shnayim biyadai, that you can hold two estrogim of that size in one hand. We talked about the other day, the Gemara said the reason was because you may need to switch around the lul of an estrog, you don't want to drop the estrog. Divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi says, no, afilo echa b'shnayadai, but even if the estrog is so big that you need both hands to hold the one estrog, then it's fine. The halacha is like him, yeah. The Gemara says, tanan rabbanan, we learn a b'raisa. First thing the Gemara has to establish is basically, now the Torah uses the word pre-Eitz Hadar. The Torah does not name it with the word Esrog. So basically, how do we know that it's an Esrog? The Gemara did similar things with the other minyan before. And now ultimately, obviously, we know that it's an Esrog because we have Kabbalah from generation to generation. As an Amman writes, you know, we know that Yoshua took an Esrog, we know that every generation after him, nobody has ever had a Hava Amina that you take anything else. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara wants to show how the actual words pre-Eitz Hadar indicate that it must be an estrog. So pre-etzot. It's eitz shatam eitzei piri yashava. It means it's the kind of tree where the wood and the fruit of it taste the same. Heveyam is an etzrug. You have to say then that that's an etzrug. Now here's the thing. I always used to joke about this. Yeah, I mean the wood. I used to always joke about that. Yeah, the wood is not edible. Neither is an etzrug. But the truth there is actually. I realized when I was learning this now, when I was preparing for this, that there is actually a lot of truth to that. Given what we were saying before, that in Gemara terminology, the flesh of the etzrug does not mean the fruit, the little bit of fruit inside. It means the thick white peel. Yes. That taste, that has a bitter taste to it, unlike the actual flesh of the etzrug, which is it's citrusy, it's tart. The white peel is actually bitter, and yeah, it tastes like the wood.
That's how it was supposed to be in the Gan Eden, and that
all the trees should be like that, right? Yeah. So anyway, the point is, Mefarshim say, actually, this goes to show, because when you get down to it, a number of the other things that the Gemara is going to go through. You could apply to other citrus fruits as well. I mean, a number of the things that we're going to go through over here apply to etzrug. You could also say they include lemons and oranges and grapefruit and whatnot. But this kind of thing that we're saying that the fruit itself, namely that thick peel, that is only true of an etzrug. All the other ones have much thinner peels. You can't really say all the other ones have actual flesh. An etzrug is the only one that has next to no flesh.
Why is Hadar defined as the same would be the same?
No, because we're saying pre-eight. We're saying the fruit is like the wood.
Yeah, but hadar, where is the...
So hadar we're not getting into yet. I mean, the Ramban actually points out, the Ramban points out in Chumash that actually what is the word hadar means beautiful. Means like something that's attractive to, it's attractive to a person by the eye, by the taste. And esrug comes from the same shodosh also. He says that esrug comes from an Aramaic shodosh, rogag, which means to desire. So therefore, literally, when the Torah is using the word hadar, an exact Aramaic translation of that is etzrug. But anyway, so the Gemara is saying that pre-eitz hadar implies that the wood and the fruit taste the same thing. Heveyam is etzrug, so you have to say that that's etzrug. The wood of the tree tastes the wood of the tree tastes the same as that thick white peel that we think of as the peel of the etzrug, and the Gemara is thinking as the actual flesh of the etzrug. Not the inside flesh, right. That's the difference. For example, an orange is from the same family as a sorghum. A lemon is from the same family as a sorghum. But all of them, the flesh has one taste, and the flesh has an acid, an acidic or taste, and the wood has a different kind of taste. The etzrug, where we're talking about that the flesh of the etzrug is actually that thick white peel that they use nowadays, for candied etzrug peel or whatever, that has the same taste as the wood. They're both bitter. Not the inside. That's what we're saying. We're saying the white stuff, the thick white peel. No. Effectively, what we're saying is, in other words, that there's the peel, and there's the zest. In Gemara terminology, it's actually the zest is what we're calling the klipa, the peel. What we think of as the peel, the Gemara is calling the flesh of the etzrug, the actual fruit itself. And what we think of, the thick white thing. And what we think of as the fruit, the Gemara just calls chadre hazera, the area where the seeds are. In other words, the Gemara is putting it as if an etzrug was something like an apple, where the seeds are in the core. Right? You don't eat an apple core. Right. It's the same thing, yeah. So the Gemara asks, "Ve'ema pilpulin? Why? Say that it, here's another example of a tree where the wood and the fruit taste the same. Peppers, not red peppers or the kind of peppers that we buy in the vegetable bin in the store. Those are vegetables and those are native to America anyway. We mean peppercorns, the kind that you make black and white pepper from. Shana, kidetanya, like we learn in a bright, mimashma shenemo natatim kol eitz. Given that the Pasuk says, when it introduces the din of Orla, that if you plant any tree, then you have to keep the fruit as Orla for 3 years, any yedeshu eitz meichel, obviously it has to be a tree where you're eating the fruit, because obviously if there's no edible fruit on it, then it's not there's no relevance of Orla. Ma tamad lema eitz meichel, so why does the Torah specifically say a tree of fruit? It means eitz shatam eitz per yashava. It means a tree where the wood and the fruit taste the same thing. Which is that? Hevem is a pilpulin. You have to say that that's peppers. L'lamdecha shal pilpulin chayavin ba'arla. Thus you learn that peppercorns are chayavin arla. Rashi points out the chiddush is peppercorns grow on something resembling a low bush. You wouldn't think it's chayavin arla. You'd think it's like a bush or something. It's like a strawberry bush or something. The chiddush is that now it's considered a tree.
What is it again?
It's a tree. It has the status in halacha of a tree.
Okay. because of what?
So Rashi says because even though it's a low bush, it's still even though it's a low bush, it's still considered a tree in halacha. Tosfos argues on that, and Tosfos says big deal. I mean, you have a lot of low bushes that are still considered trees in halacha. Certain certain kinds of berries are considered considered fruit in halacha, and you stand them bara priates, for example. So Tosfos says the reason why we would have thought is different because pepper is usually only eaten as a spice, dry. So you would think maybe it's not considered important enough that it should be subject to arla. No, therefore the pasuk says it is. And by the way, we see from this the Braisa continues. Eretz Yisrael chaseiro klum. Eretz Yisrael is not lacking anything. Don't think, in other words, pepper bushes are tropical plants. You think they don't grow in Eretz Yisrael? They can. Shenema lo sech koba. The pasuk says nothing is lacking in Eretz Yisrael. So yes, peppers are not native to Eretz Yisrael. That's fine. But if you grow them there, and you can, because Eretz Yisrael has many different microclimates, then yes, they're chayiv in arla.
Do people do that today?
Don't know. Anyway, the point of that is we see from that braisa that pepper is also the wood and the fruit, maybe that is the peppercorns have the same taste. So why don't we say that priyetzada means peppercorns? We don't know, but we said that the word hadar has many different meanings. One, the basic meaning of hadar, we've been saying it throughout the parak so far, means that it has to be beautiful. So maybe it means you have to find a really nice peppercorn and take that with your other 3 minutes. The answer is, the Gemara says, Hasam Mishum Delight Epsher. Yes, but when it comes to the Dalad Minim, it's impossible that it can be a peppercorn. Why? Because Heichi Nevid, how would we do it? Ninkat Chada, if you say you should pick up only one peppercorn, Lemikur Liski Chata, you're not going to be able to notice that you're taking it. A peppercorn is a tiny little thing. Ninkat Treyat Lasa, should we say, okay, so you take a handful of them, you take two or three of them? Can't. Echad Amarachmano, not really Echad, but the Torah says pre in the singular, pre Eitz Hadar, which means one fruit of a Hadar tree. Omer Rachmanov, Veloy Shnaim or Shloisha Peres, not two or three. So therefore, as a practical matter, yeah, if it were just for the word pre-eats, we could say that it means peppercorns. But because the Torah is saying pre, specifically, there has to be one, and on the other hand, you have to be able to notice it, otherwise nobody realizes you're doing the mitzvah, and you yourself may not realize, then necessarily it can't be peppercorns. So you're left with, it has to be the only other tree where Tam ate a period Shava, which is a Sregim. Apparently.
So that's why we were missing. It has the same taste as the
wood, right. Yeah.
Those are the only ones we can afford.
Those are the only ones, yeah. That's what we're saying, because even though you have other fruits in the citrus family, but them you can't say that the fruit, you know, the actual fruit that we eat has the same taste as the tree, because it doesn't. Only an esrog where the fruit in Gemara terminology means that thick white peel, yes, that has the same taste as the tree. Another way of learning it, Rebbe Omer, Al-Tikri Hadar Ela Hadir. You do a kriyuksiv over here. Don't read the word that it says Hadar, priate Hadar, but rather as if it said Hadir, which means a pen of animals. So just like a stable, a pen of animals has big animals and small ones, and ones that are tamim, ones that don't have blemishes, balimumin, hachinami, the same thing. The tree that the pasuk is talking about, priyei tzadar, has to be the kind, yeshbeg doylem uktanim tmimim balimumin. So what? Alter shav. Yeah, 1 second. That's the question. Alter shav peres lasbog doylem uktanim tmimim balimumin. Big deal. Any other fruit? Rashi gives us an example. Apples. You go on an apple tree. You have some big apples and some small ones. Some that have blemishes and some that don't. Ella hachikama. What he means to say is that what's unique about an esrog tree, ad shaboyim ktanim, when the new small esrogim are growing, this year's crop of esrogim, adayin gdolim kayomim. The big ones are still there on the tree. In other words, you have, unlike with apples or any other kind of fruit, you have, they don't last on the tree for that long. Eventually they become ripe, then they become overripe, and then they fall off. Esrogim are unique in that they stay on the tree basically indefinitely. And keep on growing. We talked about the other day.
They all live together for a long time.
So therefore, you have the young ones and the old ones. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea, which actually in Chassidus it relates it usually more to the next idea that the esrog lives on the tree all year round, meaning that it lives there through all seasons. So therefore, that's how the esrog represents achdus. Each of the Dalad Minim represents achdus each in its own way. The esrog, the fact that it grows on the tree all year. the fact that it's on the tree all four seasons of the year. And actually, somebody else says the Vortes also, the Estrog teaches us that there shouldn't be a generation gap. You have the mature Estrogum and the baby Estrogum all on the same tree at the same time. The lulav represents Achdus because all the leaves grow together with the Shedra, as we said earlier in the Masechta. The Hadas represents Achdus in that you have three leaves on each level of it all together. And the Arava represents Achdus because Aravas grow together in profusion. They're called in a couple of places in Gemara Achvana, Meloshen Achva, because they a lot of willow trees grow together like in brotherhood. Aravas is not an issue.
No,
Estrogum was... Oh, so which Estrogum? Okay, so you'll have to keep track. Estrogum actually go as far as Meister, I think as far as Schmitter too, but I don't remember, according to when they're picked, actually. I'll get back to... Remind me, I'll get back to that in a minute when we get to the water thing. When an Estrogum is picked, that's what determines what year it belongs to as far as Meisters. Not like most other fruits where you go according to when it reaches a certain stage of its growth. Yeah. Anyway, Rabbi Bo says differently. Al tikri hadar ela hadar. Instead of hadar, read it hadar, that it lives. Dabar shadar b'ilanim, mishana l'shana. It means a fruit that lives on the same tree from year to year. Like we just said, an estrog lasts there through all the different seasons, and it keeps on growing from year to year. Ben azayimer, al tikri hadar ela idur. Don't read hodur, but rather idur. Actually, it says on the side here that really it should be hidur or whatever. This is the shekain beloshin yavani kurim lamayim idur. In Greek, water, the word for water is idur. We're familiar with it in English. Hydro, yeah. Hydrogen, hydroelectric, dehydrate, yeah. All those come from that root. So why? The ezehi shegadol al kamayim, what kind of fruit needs a lot of water to grow? Hevim is esther. You have to say that as an estrog, which indeed, by the way, is why we treat an estrog differently from other fruits. As far as that we say most fruits, you go according to whenever they reach a certain stage of development, that's their year for Meisser. Estrogen, we treat in that sense like vegetables, just like vegetables, which need to keep on being watered in order to keep on growing. Estrogen are like that too, and that's why in Halacha, estrogen are treated differently than other fruit. But therefore, so again, an estrog is unique in that it's hidur. It's the only kind of fruit that needs a huge amount of water to keep on growing, and therefore creates hodder hints at that idea.
Although those are not fruit.
Right. All the minim need a lot of water. Yeah. That's one reason. It says in the Medrash why the Ebeshah told us to take those four minim, because Sukkos was starting to daven for rain, so therefore we take plants that need a lot of water.
Hadassim
also, yeah.
They only need water 12 months a year.
Well, we start davening for rain at the end of Sukkot, but yeah.
But still, it's not less than okay.
The Mishnah continued, Shal Asherah v'shal Eir Nidachas Posel, that an Esrog from an Asherah or an Eir Nidachas Posel, my timer, why is that? Kibin Bostrei Fakoi, because since it's slated to be burnt, Katusi Michtas Shiure, we consider already now as if it was burnt and as though the shear of it was cut down, so therefore, in other words, it doesn't have the minimum size of an Esrog. The truth is, even though the Gemara says that, it's actually not so simple. There are a number of Rishonim who learn differently, who say that actually the reason why an Esrog from an Asherah, for example, the Rambam writes, and Rabbeinu Hananel also, that the reason why an Esrog from an Asherah and an Aaron Adakas is possible is actually because of Mitzvah Haba Ba'Avera. And then there are others of them that argue because it's also Ba'ana, which if it's also Ba'ana, though, it would only be also on the first day then, because only on the first day you have the issue of Lachem. There's a whole discussion why we need all those various reasons, because, for example, Katusi Michtas Shiure maybe only applies according to some opinions. According to other opinions, we would say, okay, but it's not burned yet, so therefore it means the shiur of it is cut down. It's considered as though it's already burnt to ashes, and therefore it doesn't have the minimum size of an estrog. The Mishnah said, Shal Arla Posel, that an estrog of Arla is Posel, my timer, Pligi Rav Chir Ba'oven Rav Asi. So Rav Chir Ba'oven and Rav Asi argued why that is. Now again, we say, you know, like I said, when we were learning the Mishnah, you can't say that it's because you can't have hana from it. It's true you can't have hana from Arla, but mitzvah slav lehanes nitnu. Mitzvah, the hana you get from doing a mitzvah is not considered a hana in halacha. Because ultimately you're doing the mitzvah because of Kabbalah so, because the Eibishter said so. So any hana that you get from it is immaterial.
What kind of hana are you going to get from it?
In the case of it, that's the thing. Even if you get some kind of hana, you enjoy the look of it. Whatever. But that hana is not considered significant because ultimately the main point is you're doing the mitzvah. So what's the reason? So Rabbi Chiya Oven and Rabbi argued on the reason. One says because you're not allowed to eat it, and since the Torah is saying that it has to be it has to be yours, meaning it has to be yours for all purposes. You have to be able to do anything you want with it. Like this, it's off limits for eating. And the other one says because it's not considered to have a din of money. Rashi says it's not worth a pruta because it's also b'hana. Different Mefarshim discuss the pros and cons of that. Rashi, so what if you have... What?
I said it's not a surah.
No, it is. Orla is also b'hana.
Ah, Orla.
Orla, we're talking about, is also b'hana. So Rashi says it's not, therefore it's not worth a shavar prutta. And there's a considerable amount of discussion what Rashi means by that, because, I mean, nowadays it's impossible to find an esrog that's worth less than a prutta, obviously, but back in those days, theoretically you could. I mean, you're telling me that if an esrog is worth less than a prutta, you can't use it? There's a fair amount of discussion around this, Rashi. And Tosfos in addition discusses the issue. Isn't there anyway the issue that Orla needs to be burnt? So in that case, it would be the same as the Asherah and the Eirnidachas. There's that discussion too. And Tosfos actually says it's true. Technically, as far as Orla, we didn't need any other reason at all. We could just say because it needs to be burnt and that's that. The reason why we need this machlokes is because actually it's going to be relevant when we talk about Ma'aser Sheni. Different other, because when we get to Ma'aser Sheni, you're allowed to have anah from, you're just not allowed to eat it outside of your shalim.
Yeah, but Orla doesn't affect the whole crop, I mean,
No, but that's what we're saying. In other words, according to Tosfos, in theory, the Gemara could have just said, you know why you can't use an esrog of Orla? Because it's supposed to be burnt. But instead, the Gemara chose to go through the machlokas because we're going to need the same information later on when we get to Ma'aser Sheni.
Delay the burning, and you're going
to
say somebody...
Who says you're not allowed to delay the burning? I don't
know. Say, no, they burn the esrog from burning. So maybe I'm allowed to use a whole book of time to burn it.
Right. Okay. Now the Gemara assumes at this point, that of these two Amoraim, whichever one says you have to be able to be allowed to eat the Esrog, doesn't care whether it's considered to be your property, which means, in other words, that he would say that Ma'aser Sheni and Yerushalayim would be fine. Now Ma'aser Sheni, you're allowed to eat it, but there's a machloikas in Kedushin, whether Ma'aser Sheni is considered your property or not. Remeir there in Kedushin says it's not. The Torah gives you permission to eat it, but that's it. The reason why it comes into Kedushin, in Masechta Kedushin, is because what if a person takes Ma'aser Sheni in Yerushalayim and uses it for Kedushin? According to the mayor, no Kedushin takes effect. It's not your money. You just have permission to eat it. Going back to here then, if we assume that the one who says you have that the one who says you have to be able to eat the esrog for it to be kosher says, I only care that you have to be able to eat it, I don't care whether it belongs to you, then it would mean Rav Meir would agree that you can use a Ma'aser Sheni esrog. And we would assume Amanda Bay Din Mum and Lai Hatra Achila, that vice versa. Whoever says it has to be something that's considered that belongs to you doesn't care whether you're able to eat it or not. Therefore, he would say that an esrog of Tevel would be fine. Your Tevel belongs to you, you're just not allowed to eat it. However, the Gemara says, Tanan, let's consider the Mishnah had said, Shall Truma Tmeya Psula, that an esrog of Truma, which is Tame, is possible. Now, Bishlem Lamanda Omlafisha in Behetra Achila Shapir. If you say that the problem with an esrog of Orla is that you can't eat it, fine, you can't eat an esrog of Truma Tmeya either. Once Truma becomes Tame, the only thing you can do with it is burn it. But according to the opinion that the problem with Orla is that it's not considered to be yours, it doesn't have a din of Mamon, well then am I. So what's the problem with Truma Tmeya? Harem Asika Tachas Tapshila, you'd be allowed to use it as firewood, meaning it's yours, it has a monetary value. So you're right. When it comes, everybody does agree that the esrog has to be something which is capable of being eaten. So therefore, Orla is definitely out on those grounds. Truma Tmeya is also out on those grounds. So is Tevel. Everybody agrees you have to have Heter Achila. Pipligi b'din mamin. The question is, does it also have to be something that belongs to you? Marasava Heter Achila b'in a din mamin lebrin. And one holds that as long as you're allowed to eat it, we don't care whether it has a din mamin. Well, Marasava din mamin nami b'in, and the other one says you need both. You need to be able to eat it, and it has to be considered yours. Not much about no. It has to be considered that it's your property. In addition that you're allowed to eat it. My binai, so what we the nafkamina, like we just said, it could be nai, my sashani, be your shalayim, I'll leave it to the mayor. The nafkamina would be, according to the mayor, can you use an estrog of my sashani in your shalayim? Lamanda Amalafisha and Bahata Achila, according to the opinion that the only operative thing is whether you can eat it or not. Well, good, Hareyesh Bahata Achila. It's in your shalayim, it's my sashani, you're allowed to eat it. So therefore, it should be good. Lamanda Amalafisha and Batin Maman, but according to the opinion that not only you have to be able to eat it, but it has to be considered that it belongs to you. According to Rav Meir, Maisesheni is considered the property of the Eivishter. He gives you permission to eat it, but it's not fundamentally yours. And therefore, according to that way of looking at it, you would not be allowed to use an Esrog of Maisesheni in your Shalayim. Even in your Shalayim, that is. You, for sure, you couldn't use it outside your Shalayim because there you can't eat it.
No, you cannot.
No, to be yours. According to a mayor, there's nothing you can do with it except eat it. No, you can give it to somebody else to eat in your shalayim. But you can't sell it, for example. Yeah, that's a given. You can't sell it. Once it's in your shalayim, you can't exchange it for anything else. Yeah. That, no, even the Chachamim agree to that. That Maita Shani, once it came into your shalayim, you can't be poyed to it. Yeah.
What do you do?
You just have to eat it. Only if it becomes tamei, can it be poyed to it. That's another matter. So now we started by saying that Rav Chiya bar Abba and Rav Asi have this machlokes, but we didn't say which one said which opinion. So which one is which? Kistayim, we can prove that Rav Asi de Amal Afishein Badin Mamin, that Rav Asi is the one who says that it has to be that the esrog is considered to be your property. It's not just good enough that you're able to eat it; it has to actually be your property. Why de Amal Rav Asi? Because Rav Asi actually said esrog from Isaac Cheney. According to the mayor, Rabasi says that according to the mayor, a person cannot use an esrog of Maisa Sheni on Yom Tov, and the different Chacham, and according to the Chachamim, you can. Tisayim, good. So that proves it, that Rabasi is the one who says that there would be such a machlokas. According to the Chiya Ba Abba, the operative thing is only whether you can eat it or not. Obviously, even according to the mayor, you can eat it. Therefore, according to him, there's no machlokas between the mayor and the Chachamim.
But according to Rav
Asi, there is. That proves that Rav Asi is the one who says that it has to be, there has to be a monetary value to it. Gufa, getting back to what we said, Amar Rav Asi, Esrog Shal Maisa Sheni, L'Dibur Rav Meir Einar Am Yetze Be'yedecha Vasa B'Yom Tov, that an Esrog Maisa Sheni, according to Rav Meir, you cannot be Yotze, your obligation with it on Yom Tov, and L'Dibur Chachamim, Adam Yotze Be'yedecha Vasa B'Yom Tov, and according to the Chachamim, you can. Because again, according to Rav Meir, it's not considered your property, and according to the Chachamim, it is.
Why consider it as your property?
Because they say once the Eivishter gave it to you permission to eat, then you have rules of where you can eat it and under what conditions you can eat it. But it's still basically considered your property. Another similar case, matzah shal maisa sheni, l'divrei meir einanam yetzei b'yedei chavasa v'pesach, matzah made out of maisa sheni wheat. According to the mayor, you would not be able to be yotze with it on Pesach, because as the Gemara is going to point out in a little bit, we learn from Sukkim that the matzah you eat has to belong to you. According to the Chachamim, you could. This, by the way, another case, Issa Shal Maisa Sheni, a dough of Maisa Sheni, L'divrei Meir Pturim and Achala, according to the Meir, such a dough would be potter from Chala, because again, it's not considered yours, and the L'divrei Chachamim, Chayev is for Chala, and according to the Chachamim, it would be Chayev and Chala, because it belongs to you. So, Maski for a Papa, so the Papa asks on that, I can understand why the case of a dough, why you're talking about whether Rav Meir and the Chachamim would argue whether you have to take Maisa Sheni from it, or whether you have to take Challah from it. Because the pasuk says the first of your dough. So that implies that it has to be yours, that has to belong to you. So if it's Maisa Sheni, according to Rav Meir, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the Eivishter. Therefore, you wouldn't have to take Challah from it. Esrog namik ziv lochem, misha lochem. By the esrog also it says lochem, which means it has to belong to you. So okay, we don't understand why those two would have this machlokas. El matzah, but why matzah? What's the issue? Mixiv matzachem. Does the Torah anywhere say about the matzah lochem, or say that it has to be your matzah? So why does it matter whether it belongs to you or not? We make a gzeira shava of the two words lechem. The matzah is called lechem oini, bread of poverty. And it says, by challah, when you eat from the bread of the land, from the bread of Eretz Yisrael, then you should take challah from it. So, just like when it comes to challah, as we established, because the Torah says, Arisa Sechem, means it has to be your dough, so therefore, Maisa Sheni, according to Rav Meir, is out. Apkan, Mishachem, Velo Mishamaita. So the same thing by Masa. The same Zeta Shava would tell us that Masa, that does not belong to you. You're not allowed, you can't be Yotze with it on Pesach. There is, by the way, a fair amount of discussion on this. There's many, many different populim that have been written throughout the generations on a related issue, which is actually discussed in the Yerushalmi. If we're saying that the masa has to belong to you, and apparently even the Chachamim agree with that, they're just saying as a practical matter, my tisheni is yours. What about if you steal masa and eat it? Could you be yotze with it? Masa gzula. Yeah. So besides the whole issue of mitzvah bab avera that we talked about earlier in the parak, but do we say that since the Torah is saying that, since we're saying based on this zera shava that the masa has to belong to you, then you couldn't be yotzer with stolen masa? So there's a lot of ink has been spilled. A lot of ink has been spilled on that issue. So one answer actually is that you acquire it b'shunei ma'aser. Basically, when are you yotzer the mitzvah? When you swallow the masa, chewing it is that you're not yotzer the mitzvah. If you chew it and spit it out, for example, when you swallow it, that's a definite shunei ma'aser. It's a definite shunei ma'aser. It's definitely different than it was before you started chewing it. So that's a different matter. Whether when we talk about masa gzula, are we talking about that you stole wheat and turned it into masa? Then already you were kind of b'shunei Hashem at that point. Or are we talking about that you stole ready-made matzah already? Then there's no shinui until maybe you chew it and swallow it. Bringing a bracha is a different issue, because we talked about before in the case of a sukkah and in the case of a lulav that you can't necessarily make a bracha on these things anyway, because b'tzei berach nias Hashem. Because making a bracha on such a thing would be blaspheming Hashem, because you acquired the mitzvah through an avera. Now, but that's the thing. There's a difference between being yotz of the mitzvah and being able to make a bracha on it. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah, can we say that the following Braisa supports what Rav Ami is saying? Rav Ami was saying that there's machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim about Maita Sheni, about an Esrug of Maita Sheni, about Chala, about a dough of Maita Sheni. And the Braisa says, Issa Shal Maita Sheni, Pturim and Chala, a dough of Maita Sheni in Yerushalayim, obviously we're talking about, is Pater from Chala, Divri Rav Meir, Vachamim Chayav is Chala, and Chacham says Chayav in Chala. I said, what do you mean, Lema Messiah? What do you mean? Can we say that this supports Rav Ami? This is exactly the same thing he said. The Gemara will ask Lema Messiah, if you have something which seems to be related, and we want to see whether it actually is expressing the same thing here. It's pretty much saying the exact same words that he said. Ella, what the Gemara says, right, what we meant by the Lema Messiah, midibaha pligi baha nami pligi, can we say, based on that braisa, that since it's a given now, we know that Rameir and the Chachamim argue in the case of a dough, in the case of challah, does that necessarily mean that they argue on the other two things also, on matzah and on esrog? A dilma, shiny issa, or maybe a dough is different. Amar kra, arisesechem, tre zimni, because the pasuk mentions this word, arisesechem, your dough, twice. So maybe, therefore, we could say, by dough, the Torah is saying it twice, meaning that it's definitely ma'akiv. By the other things, by matzah and by esrog, maybe not. It only says lachem once by matzah, by esrog, and by matzah, it doesn't say it at all. We only learn from Gzeira Shava. That's what we're saying. Lema Messiah, we're not sure whether, based on this price, so we can generalize that they're arguing on all three cases, or only on the one. The Gemara doesn't leave it. I mean, the halach is not like a mayor anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. Mishnah said shall truma tmeya psula, that an esrog of truma tmeya is possible. The last beheter achila, because we said before you have to be able to eat the esrog of truma tmeya. You can't eat. Vishal truma tahara lo yito, and then the Mishnah continued that an esrog of truma which is tahar lachachila you should not take it. Now why not? Pligi bar Rav Ami v'Rabasi. So Rav Ami and Rabasi argue on that point. One says because you're going to be able to be, you're going to be machshir at lekabel tumah, you're going to make it susceptible to becoming tamei. Why? We know, we've learned many times before, that food is only susceptible to becoming tamei after it becomes wet. The esrog up to this point may not have become wet. As a matter of fact, I mean, people usually try to keep their esrogim dry because if they get wet, they might spoil. So that's the thing. You keep your lulav and hadassim and arabis in water. When you take them out of the water, or nowadays when you unwrap them from the towel, there's still water on them. When you hold the esrog together with them to shake it, you're going to get water on the esrog. Therefore, the esrog is now going to be susceptible to becoming tamei, where before it wasn't. Truma, you have a mitzvah to try and keep it tahor. According to one way of looking at it, if you're going to be making the esrog wet, even a little bit, then you're now making it susceptible to becoming tameh, where before it couldn't, and you're being over with that on the mitzvah to keep, to make sure that truma stays tahor. You have to have intention. You have to have intention about the water. But fine, here the water is l'ratzon. You want the water to be on the lulav and whatnot, so it keeps them fresh. So already l'ratzon, and then already whatever. I mean, the Mishnah in Machshirin deals with the details. But yeah, apparently there's enough ratzon over here that yes, the Esrog will be mukshar by that. You don't necessarily want it to be moksha, but you don't mind it getting wet per se. You just mind, you mind because it'll be moksha. But you don't. When you take your esrog out of its box and you take your lulav and esrog out of their towel, you don't mind if your esrog gets a few drops of water on it. And that's moksha in the kabbal truma. So you're not supposed to do that. The other one says, forget about making it moksha in the kabbal truma. Maybe that's not an issue, but the issue is you're ruining it. Everybody knows the more you handle an esrog, the more brown it becomes. So therefore, this esrog is truma. You're supposed to be using it as food, and now you're making it less usable as food by handling it a lot.
The coin can use the truma.
That's what we're saying. Vachatchila, he should not. Mm-hmm. Now, my benayu, what's the practical difference between them? The answer is kigun shikara aleh shem chut mikli pata chitzayna. What if the person designated the esrog as truma, but only the body of the esrog itself, only the flesh of the esrog, the white and the stuff inside that, but not the zest, not the very outer layer. So lamanda amrim pnei shemachshir eket. If you say it's a matter of hechsher truma, you still have that because even though the zest he's not making truma, nevertheless he still wants that to be chulin. Nevertheless, though, it's still considered a shomer. It's something that protects the fruit inside it, and it has the status of the fruit in halacha. So when water touches it, the whole thing becomes moksha lekabel truma. But on the other hand, mepnei shemachsida leka. But machsida is not an issue because the only thing that gets ruined is the zest, is the yellow layer. But the imnatok sheira. But the Mishnah said, if you did take such an esrog, then it's kosher. Why? Because lamandam abnesha and mehet achila. Because according to the opinion of Chia Ba'aba that we said on Amud Aleph that you have to be able to eat the esrog, no problem. Hareyesh mehet achila. You are allowed, not Rav Asi rather. According to Rav Asi, that you have to not only be able according to Chia Ba'aba that you have to be able to eat it. Then fine, you're allowed to eat truma. Well, not only you're allowed to eat truma, even if you're not a kohen. Suppose you're a Yisrael. But you might have relatives who are Kayanim. Rashi gives us an example. You know, you have a grandson. Your daughter married a Kayan, and you have a grandchild who's a Kayan. You can give it to you can give it to him to eat. That's if we have the previous case where you made the outside not be truma. Here we're back to the case if you did make the whole thing truma. And Laman Domel, if you shane but din mamen, and according to Rav Chiya Ba'aba, who said that the problem, or according to Rav Asi rather, who said that the problem was that with Orla, that it doesn't have a din mamen because you can't use it for anything, no problem. Harayesh ben din mamen. Truma has a din mamen. A Koyan would be allowed to do kedushin with it. A Yisrael actually would be allowed to do kedushin with it. Also, his mekudeshes, his fiance, would then have to go and sell it or give it to a Koyan. But it is actually eatable and it is usable. It has a monetary use in halacha. Rashi, by the way, has a very, very interesting explanation here. In the Rashi Hare Yesh Vaheta Achila. So Rashi's pointing out, like we just said, Truma, a Koyan's allowed to eat it, and even a Yisrael has a way of having it eaten by his grandson, for example. Rashi uses an unusual expression. Avapidyan Einla, you should know, Truma cannot be redeemed, lias niteres lachilis Yisrael, that you should say that then it becomes that a Yisrael should be able to eat it. V'ha'oimakein Roshahu, and if somebody says such a thing, he's a Rosha. That if anybody thinks that Truma is capable of being redeemed and then becomes mutter for Yisrael, Rashi says, everybody comments on this. Is a very unusual thing for Rashi to say such a strong expression that anybody says such a thing as a Rasha. Why?
Taking away the coin, Rasha or Resha?
Rasha. Rasha. V'ha'oimer Kain. Anybody who says that, Rasha, who is a Rasha. Yeah, okay, but still, it's an unusual. So there's a very interesting drush that I saw about this. They referenced it in the Orth Svor Gemara, and I looked it up. In a nutshell, we find in Sefer Yirmiyah that the Jewish people are compared to Truma, which means just like Truma has kedusha, like Truma has intrinsic kedusha, and it can never be redeemed, it can never become no longer Truma. so also us. Now, there were people in various times in Jewish history who argued, no, the Eibishter sent us into Golos, obviously that means we lost our status, you know, near Tuchal HaGoyim, Beis Yisrael, we should be like everybody else. If a person thinks that Truma can lose its status as Truma and be Nifta, can be redeemed, that means this is the kind of person who also takes that view that the same thing can happen with the Jewish people, that we can lose our uniqueness as Jews and be Kachal HaGoyim, Chas HaShalom, and such a person would be a Rasha. So therefore Rashi is speaking strongly against such a thing. That's a nice connection with Purim, you know, which that was exactly the situation at the time of Purim, that the Haman claimed that that's the situation, Kachala going Beis Yisrael, and we proved him wrong by going on Mesudas Nefesh for 11 months.
Boy, the Jews would have converted.
I mean, it's brought in Chassidus, that everyone's in Torah, if the Yidden had converted, then, But not a single Yid did. Everybody stood in Mesudas Nefesh for those entire 11 months, from when the Gezeirah was published until Yud Gimel Adar. Because keep in mind, you know, the way the Megillah, the way we find it in the Megillah, it's not Achashverosh didn't give the Yidden permission to kill their enemies on Yud Gimel Adar. What he gave them permission is to defend themselves. The original Gezeirah is still in effect. Sof Hashenichta V'Shem HaMelech can never be overturned. So the Goyim still have the right to attack the Jews on Yud Gimel Adar. All it was is before Mordechai got into the act, the Jews were legally not allowed to defend themselves, and now they're legally allowed to defend themselves, so that still for that entire year, everybody was still in great danger. The fact that they all withstood it would not been rescinded, exactly. So the fact that they stayed as Jews during that 11 months is tremendous for Mesudas Nefesh. Yeah.
And is there a sign for him that they're going... can destroy the Jews still...
No, obviously after Yud Gimel Adar, that was that, but. Mishnah continued with Shal Dmai, that we said that an Esrog of Dmai, we said was a Machlokas B'Shamai B'Sil, whether you can use it. My Tamid B'Sil, also B'Shamai, we can understand, you're not allowed to eat Dmai. Why does B'Sil say you're allowed to? Given the boy Machkelu L'Nichse, because if the person wants to Machkir his property, B'Hava Ani, then he will be a poor person, because he lay, then this Esrog of Dmai would be suitable for him. Hashtag Hashtanami lochem karina bay. So therefore, even now, even when he's not made all his property hefker, it's still considered enough lochem that he's allowed to use it. The term, because we actually learn in a Mishnah in Masechet Dmai, ma'achil masaniyim dmai v'asachsanya dmai. You're allowed to feed poor people dmai, and you're allowed to feed achsanya dmai. Rashi says achsanya is soldiers who are quartered in your house. You know, in those times, you know, they didn't have the Third Amendment to the Constitution that they can't quarter soldiers in your house in peacetime. When soldiers are quartered in your house, you have to provide food for them. If they're even if they're Jewish soldiers, you're allowed to feed them dmai. Although Tosfos discusses that actually the Yerushalmi talks about, are we talking about that these soldiers are Jews or Goyim? But whatever the point is, the Amar of Huna, and Rav Huna says this is actually a machlokes. Tana, we learn in a brisa. Beshama omim ein machil nasaniyim beasach sinoim dmai. Beshama says that you cannot feed poor people and soldiers dmai. So according to Beshama, dmai is not edible. But Beshama omim machil nasaniyim dmai beasach sinoim dmai. And according to Beshama, you can. So therefore, we see according to Beshama, there are loopholes for eating dmai. And therefore, one of those loopholes is that you yourself, in theory, could become a poor person and be able to eat it. We said Shalmai Sushani Yerushalayim, that an Esrog of Mai Sushani in Yerushalayim. We said Lachatchila, you should not take it. Same reasons as before. Lamanda Amar Pnei Machshira, because according to the opinion that we said with Truma that you shouldn't use it because you'd be Machshira with the Kabbal Truma, Hare Machshira. Same problem with Mai Sushani. Mai Sushani, you also have to keep Tahar. No. It's being Machshira right away. And Lamandom, Pnesha Mafsida, Hare Mafsida, and according to the one who says that you're damaging it, then again, you're right, not right away, but still, you know, each handling of it damages it a little. I mean, there's a reason why the Esrog vendors prefer that you don't, you know, go touch every one of their Esrogim while you're looking at them, you know.
Although it's inside, it's not
really as but we said if you did take one of my Tashani, then the evidence kosher. Why? Lamandom, Pnesha Shein Baheter Achila, Hare, according to the opinion that you couldn't use one from Orla because you weren't allowed to eat it, well, in this case, with Ma'aseh Sheni, everybody would agree you're allowed to eat it, therefore you're allowed to use it as an Esrog. And according to the opinion that we said that the problem is that we said with Orla is that it doesn't have a din moment. In that case, you would have to say Hamani Rabbanan. Then you would have to say that our Mishnah is specifically according to the Rabbanan, because Reb Meir, as we said on Amud Aleph, would in fact say that you can't use an Esrog of Ma'aseh Sheni because it's not considered yours. And therefore it doesn't have monetary value. Yeah. The Mishnah said also chazazis, that if there's boils on the esrog, and there, the Mishnah said if there's boils on the majority of the esrog. So Amr of Chista, Rav Chista says, Davar zeh Rabbeinu Agadol Amrei, the following thing, our great Rebbe said this, this means Rav, Hamakim Yeh Be'ezre, Hashem should help him. We had this expression the other day on the Aflam Gimel 2, where Bepashtus and Bepashtus, it means he's giving his Rebbe a bracha. That Loishanu Elav Hamakim Echad, that when does the Mishnah say that the Esrog is possible, if the Chazazis is in one place, Av B'Shnayim or Shloshim Akhamis, but if Chazazis is in two or three different places, Kosher, then it would be Kosher. Even if it's the majority of the Esrog. Amalei Rava, so Rava argues the same. Adar Abba, B'Shnayim or Shloshim Akhamis, Havaleikim and Numa are possible. On the contrary, if you have it in two or three places, then it's like a spotted Esrog, it should be possible. Ella, Itmar Sefer, Itmar, so you're right. This expression actually is supposed to refer to the end of the Mishnah. Not to the beginning where we said that if the Chazazis is on most of the Esrog, but the second part where it said if the Chazazis is on a minority of the Esrog that we said it's kosher, on that, Amr of Chista, Dover Zer, Rabbein Agadol Amr, Ramakim, Yeh Be'ezre, Lo Shana Alav Makim Echad, this is only if the Chazazis is in one area, Alav B'Shnayim, or Shleshim Mekaymas, but it's in two to three different areas, spread around the Esrog, have a like Menuma or Apostle. Then it's considered Menuma, then it's considered spotted, and it's possible. So in Shulchan Aruch it talks about, now how does this relate to many times we find on our esrog and we find little bleflach, the little leaf-shaped marks that come from, you know, the esrog was, you know, a certain part of the esrog was not exposed to the air while it was growing. There was a leaf on top of it or something else that caused the spot to turn dark. One thing is, Mephoshim point out, a chazazis from our Mishnah, Rashi mentioned that it's like little boils, little exactly that, little boils, means that they're actually raised from the surface of the esrog. Bleflach are usually flat, so therefore they're not an issue. Or at least not as much of an issue. They're actually raised off the surface of the esrog, whereas bleflach are flat. They're flat on the surface of the esrog, so therefore they're less of an issue. Maybe. I mean, that's chazazis doesn't necessarily have to be from inside, right? I mean, it could be, for example, from a fungal infection or some such thing. Amar Rava v'al choytmai, if the chazazis... Yeah. And this is a bunch of them, yeah. Amar Rava v'al choytmai, and if the chazazis is on the choytim of the esrog, v'afilu b'mashu unami, even if it's a small one, puzzle, then it would be puzzle. Now, what is a choytim? We're all familiar with the idea that the chotem is the top part of the esrog, you know, from where it starts narrowing, you know, the esrog is shaped like this, more or less. So from where it starts narrowing all the way to the top, that whole area is considered the chotem. That's one opinion. That's the Rosh, that's how the Rosh explains the Rif. But Rashi says that the chotem means only the area where it starts narrowing, only that one band. The area above that is not considered the chotem. And then the Rambam holds differently. Basically the Gartel, yeah. And
sometimes it looks like a Gartel.
Yeah, okay. And then the Rambam has yet another shita. The Rambam holds that the Chotem actually means what we think of as the Pitim, the little stem on top. And then there's another opinion. There's some other Rishonim who say that it's the little bump on the top of the Esrog directly below that. Either way, according to all the different opinions, the point is that part of the Esrog is the part that you notice first. So therefore, even a small chazazis over there is a problem, because then it makes the esrog no longer mother, because it looks bad. As opposed to any other part of the esrog, you would have to have a significant amount of chazazis for it to be a problem.
The one that says the chotem is the part that starts narrowing, right?
Yeah.
So the chazis has one chazis.
So even a small chazazis, this is why when we look for esrogim nowadays, we try to be careful that narrow part of the esrog from the widest point of the esrog until the top, we try to make sure that that's as clean as possible of any spots, because we're always concerned that those spots might be considered chazazis.
And that's the halacha?
Well, the halacha is according to that, where possible, but again, where it's not possible...
Yeah.
Where it's not possible, then you have other possibilities. I mean, you know, then if need be, you know, and Shulchan Aruch talks about the idea that even in some cases you can even use minim that are outright possible on any but the first day. So, you know, there is room to be lenient if you don't have a choice. But I mean, nowadays, you know, every year you got 10,000 esrogim here in Crown Heights, you know, then you don't really have such an excuse. Stop here.
You brought this